All right, everyone. Last looks. Quiet on set. Roll sound. Sound speed. Roll camera. Camera speed. Scene one. Take one. Mark it. And action. Hi, I'm Ed, the host of Savannah on Film. And we explore the economic and cultural impact and values of the film industry in Savannah through conversations with people who work in the industry and related fields. You can find us here on WRUULP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul. Savannah, hello the world. And yes, I survived the Savannah crud, as I call it. I can I have my voice back. If you're wondering where we were last week on Savannah on Film, oh, our wonderful weather, when going from what, 80 degrees to 40 degrees, didn't agree with me well, so I'm back and I'm super excited. I've got a wonderful guest today, an extremely accomplished individual here. Her name is Madeline Curtis. Welcome to the show, Madeline.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you've got a cameraman here, a professional cameraman, your husband.
That's my husband.
Hey, Steven. What's husband's name?
Steven.
Welcome, Steven. And so you may see him popping in and out of frame, but it's all good. I want to welcome everybody to Savannah's number one radio station voted by you, the listeners. You are who makes us here the number one station in Savannah and number one talk radio. And we thank you so much for that. We don't take it lightly. And you're listening to Savannah on Film. And our purpose here is to explore the economic and cultural impact of the I'm out of practice. To explore the economic and cultural impacts of the film industry in Savannah through conversations with the people who work in the industry and related fields. I'll get it together. Live radio. I love it. We are here on WRUU 107.5 FM LP Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul. I love doing that. Don't forget, WRUU is on Twitter. That's at WRUU 107.5. And I'm going to read a little introduction about Madeline Curtis here. You should see her. I almost said your rap sheet, but no, not your rap sheet. My gosh, what haven't you done? From film, television, theater, commercials, dance, training. You've got so many special talents. Let's just start with a little intro here, okay? Madeline Curtis is an American actress, singer, and dancer, diverse and multi-talented, to say the least. She brings that with her from New York and L.A. and a broad range of experience in film, television, theater, and the world of dance. You're the first person on the show, I believe, that has a background in dance and choreography. So, checkbox. You're getting it all. You're getting a super-duper show today. And let's see. Madeline is also fluent in French and Greek. I'm working on English, apparently. I'm not. I haven't mastered that. She has an extensive background in professional dance, theater, and motion pictures, coupled with her vast storehouse of general information gleaned from her world travels. And it's a synergy into a rare and intensely focused perspective reflected in her uncommonly imaginative work. It's her ability to maturely yet enthusiastically share her vision with others, both verbally and through a plethora of alternative media, which makes her a truly gifted artist and a high standard of quality. You studied at the Sorbonne. Okay. See, I can't speak French either. In Paris, you hold a BA from Vassar College, an MA from Tufts University. Okay. An MBA from Columbia University, and probably another one you forgot about, right?
A couple others too.
Yeah, let's get that mic a little bit closer to you there. Yeah, there we go. Okay. That's better. Thank you. Madeline is known for Chance from 2016, Cage No More, and Friday the 13th, Jason Goes to Hell from 1993, and Eyes of a Stranger from 81. My gosh. I was looking at your IMDb, and it just goes on and on and on. And I don't even really know where to start. Let's see, but I will. Let's start at the beginning. What got you interested in film, per se?
Well, I actually started as a dancer. I grew up with music, played piano all my life, and music was really the root of it all. I think that, you know, music just brought me into dance. And I came from a family of, you know, I was Greek-American, born mm-hmm. here. But my family was very hell-bent on education, so you were not going to go off and become a dancer.
Right.
You know, you're going to end up in Greenwich Village, you know, smoking dope or something, and it wasn't,
oh dear.
You know, you shouldn't be a dancer. So I always sort of lived this double life, and I went to school, and I always studied dance, and I studied music. I played piano all my life, and I sang. And when I got to college, I got more serious about it because I went to college in New York at Vassar. Mm-hmm. And I had access to New York City. And I would go down and I studied. I was Balanchine trained with dancer teachers from the New York City Ballet and American Ballet Theater, Joffrey Ballet, all the great ballet schools. And I so I got my dance training and I was ballerina, basically. I hadn't done jazz or hip hop or any of that. But then finally, I had a boyfriend, and he watched the Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders movie on TV. I was at Columbia Business School at the time. This is a couple of years later. Mm-hmm. And he told me how wonderful those girls were and how hot they looked. And I said, well, I can do that. He said, no, you can't. You're a ballerina. And I said, no, I can do that.
You're like,
watch
this.
So I said, don't dare me to do something.
Awesome.
So I ended up, without saying anything to anyone, auditioning. I called up the New England Patriots, mm-hmm. and I went and I auditioned and I made the team. And that's what sort of propelled me into dance in a more commercial vein.
Okay.
I had done regional ballet companies and this and that and the other thing, but I ended up saying, you know what? I really like this. And I started doing jazz dance. Okay. And hip-hop dance and tap dance. And then I started auditioning for musicals. Mm-hmm. So I moved from straight dance, concert dance, into musical theater. And from musical theater, after doing, you know, many, many shows in musical theater and becoming actually a professional in musical theater, I'm an equity performer, mm-hmm. I wanted to, you know, get to the point where you say, okay, I'm not going to dance in those too much anymore. I'm getting older. And in 1980, I got the role in Eyes of a Stranger in Florida, and I got my SAG card. And
awesome.
After getting my SAG card, that kind of parlayed more and more into the acting. And that's how I started acting. All the while, still continuing to do academia and acting at the same time. And it just sort of an avocation became a vocation. And that's it.
Wow. So the bug kind of got you a little bit later in life, I guess, the acting bug.
The acting bug, because I just was so involved with music, and music lent to dance and choreography more so than just acting.
I wanted to ask you about choreography. How do you know when you approach a music, whether it's in theater or whatever, and you're doing the choreography, how do you know what steps work best? I mean, obviously, for doing it a long time, what's your process? Where does that inspiration?
Okay, so how it happens is, to me, it starts with the music. And music, I especially like very mathematical music. I love classical music. I love things with a beat.
Okay.
Some of this sort of new age is kind of like contemporary. It's not my natural bent.
Mm-hmm.
But classical music just rings true with me. And it's very countable. It's very mathematical. I was always good in mathematics. I love structure and design.
Okay.
And what it is, choreography is just design. That's why one of my degrees was in landscape architecture, because it's all the same thing. And so you start with the music. What I'll do is I'll count it all out on paper, all the counts,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll actually visualize what's happening. And you just create a design, but you have to have the ability to know the steps. So a lot of
right.
people that like to choreograph, but they don't really have the facility of the technique under them. I guess it's sort of, you can liken it to a jazz musician. You know, some of them can do it off the cuff, but most people are classically trained, and then they can take all that
right.
classical technique.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe the technique is the base of it. And then if you're a good technical dancer, you can do all forms of dance.
You could probably teach me a lot, because I can't dance.
I saw you doing those hip-hop moves.
Oh, I don't know what those were. Those were probably nervous reactions. I don't know. It definitely was interpretive dance, I guess. So, I mean, you've had training in voice, acting, dance. You're a scuba diver. I mean,
yeah,
certified
well,
scuba diver.
Well, that was again with that same boyfriend who told me I couldn't be a cheerleader. He was he was the captain of the Columbia swim team. And we were going on a trip, and he said, well, if you want to come with me, you better know how to scuba dive.
And
so I went and got certified in scuba diving.
And was it the cheerleaders with the Patriots? Is that
Patriots, New England Patriots.
New England Patriots. And
long time ago.
Sorry to any non-Patriot fans out there.
It's like we're in Georgia.
I don't know. There's probably some Patriots fans, but what was that like? Like the first time you stepped out on a football field. And
it was the most amazing experience. Our first game was a Monday Night Football game
mm-hmm.
against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh my gosh.
With Terry Bradshaw.
Wow. I love
and,
Terry Bradshaw.
You know, we
He's
made
awesome.
The tunnel there in the beginning with
oh
the pom poms, and all the lights were in. It was like this haze of lights. And up in the stands was Daryl Stingley, who had gotten paralyzed in the previous season, getting hit by someone in the Rams, or hit him or something. Anyway, he was paralyzed and they were honoring him. But, you know, we come out and there's this absolute roar of 30,000 people. And you're like, this is crazy.
It's like a fan that must, like, blow at you. You
and
know,
it's funny.
Like
you put on
volume.
That uniform and people are like chip beef up against a chain link fence.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take off the uniform and become a regular person. No one knows who you are.
So it's definitely exhilarating. It's what it looks like on TV.
It's only 10 games, but it was really – and it. Whenever I would go for a job interview and I had NFL cheerleader on my resume,
it would raise an eyebrow, right?
If it was a guy that was interviewing me and he liked football, it didn't matter what other credentials I had. That was the important thing.
Us guys sometimes can be single-minded, unfortunately, especially when it comes to football, and I get that. So dance in general is still part of your life, still part of what you do.
Absolutely.
The way you, we talk about creating and on this show and being an artist, and art is more than just painting. It's more than just writing. It's more than just acting. It's more than just, you know, whatever field you or department you work in film. It's, I look at it all as art, and dance is certainly that. And, rhythm, it's, like you said, and I'm not at all a dance professional by any means. It's about timing, like, and you can draw a parallel to that almost, I guess, in the film industry. It's about timing. It's like everything's on a schedule. Everything's got to hit on the mark, and it's got to hit this and hit that as an actress. I know that you deal with that too. So
yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of similarities in that. For example, I went to college with Meryl Streep. She was at Vassar when I was at Vassar. She was 2 years older than I was, and she looked exactly the same, and she had a big sheepdog, and she would drive around on her bike. But using her as an example, I mean, she had wonderful training in acting, and I really believe, just like with dance, if you have really good training, I mean, people think like you just get a script and you just read it. No, you have to understand it. I mean, you have to train in acting, too.
You have to become that character and live in that character's
mind.
Right,
and there's a technique to it, and there's a craft to it, and it's not just reading things on the page. Otherwise, everyone would go be a ballet dancer because you can learn the steps, but that doesn't mean you're a
otherwise, I'd be an accepting an Academy Award. No,
right. And, you know, we all can see bad acting when bad acting happens. And so it's hard to be seamless when it's natural. That's when it's good acting.
Right.
But it takes a lot of work.
So whatever happened to this, what's her name, Meryl Streep?
Meryl Streep.
Yeah, I don't think we ever heard from her again, right?
Oh, no. Yeah, right, no.
Probably the most acclaimed or most awarded actress of
all
time, I think.
And she has a wonderful technique. And she can do theater. She can do comedy. She can do, because she's well-trained. You know, she ended up went to Vassar, and she was very good in the drama department there. And then she went to Yale Drama School. And, you know, it's also a lot of it, the problem with the acting career is a lot of wonderful actors out there, but to get the breaks, it's extremely difficult. And you have to face a lot of rejection. And that's what a lot of people just, can't do
that. What advice, that leads me to the question of what advice do you have for people that are up and coming, let's just say in acting, when those projects aren't coming, when those film, you just were almost the person for the part, and you thought you had the part, and then, you know, it didn't quite work out. What is your advice to actors?
You just have to, love the process. I work on my acting career every single day, whether I'm getting an audition or not. You have to try over time to get your team in place. You try to have a good agent who you have a good rapport with. You have to keep your skills up. I constantly work out to keep my dancing up, even though I'm way older than I would be dancing. I teach ballet. That's how I keep up with my dancing, keeping my fingers in it. Keep up my voice. I sing with the Savannah Philharmonic Chorus.
Wow.
I'm always singing. So you have to keep all the skills up. And I studied, not here since I moved to Savannah 5 months ago, but I was actively taking acting classes all the time for years and years and years. Because it's not that you don't know how anymore or you have to learn how. It's that you have to keep your skills up. It's like an athlete. If you don't do your practices, you can't be good on the game. And then the audition comes. It's almost like a lottery. So you get this audition, and I think some famous actor said it, and I forget who it was, that the only time you really have control over your acting career is when you're in that room in the audition for those few minutes, and that's your audience, is either one director, one casting director, a bunch of producers. And that's when you have to really show your stuff. And if you're not ready for it, I mean, if you're not prepared, then it's always just, you know, luck of the draw. And you might not get it. You might not get the part. You cannot take it personally. It's just that it's your own person that you're selling. And it's very hard for people to go, I'm not good enough. I didn't do a good job. No. I'll tell one funny story.
Sure. Go ahead.
I was in Warner Brothers. I lived in L.A. in the early 90s. And I was, auditioning around. Mostly I was dancing. I did a lot of hip-hop dancing in those days and jazz dancing. And I was in Warner Brothers Studios for an audition. I had an agent. I did some acting auditions, too. Right. And it was for the part of a flight attendant. And it was, would you like the chicken or the beef, sir? That was it. One line. And I go into this, you know, casting office, and there is literally 40 girls that look exactly like me. And I'm looking around. It's a beautiful day in California. And I'm stuck for 6 hours in this waiting room, waiting to say, would you like the chicken or the beef, sir? And I get into the room, and there's all these, you know, guys in suits and the director and whatnot. And they're like, could you say it a little bit this way? How about, could you say it a little bit that way? Could you try it again this way? And I walked out of there and I said, this is the craziest business, because anyone could really do that line. And a producer's daughter probably got the part. I mean, who knows? So you can't think, I didn't do well, that's why I didn't get the role. It's just everyone has experience, and the experience.
Sometimes it's, you know, Meryl Streep got it that time, but it could have easily been you.
She loses, well, at this point in career, she gets invited for things. But even at the higher levels, when I lived in L.A., I worked in L.A., you would see Michelle Pfeiffer going in against other people of her caliber, and they had to audition. my brother actually was an assistant to the agent, one of the agents that had, you know, George Michael and Michelle Pfeiffer and all.
Oh, wow.
And they would call up and say, can I have this audition? I really want to audition. They're just as stressed, but at a higher level.
Yeah.
So it doesn't go away.
It's almost like every new film is a new start.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and I want to get into something, because you've been in the business how long?
Oh, since 1980. As a union member.
As a union member, okay. The role of women, obviously, is changing in film, and thankfully. And we're moving forward with a better knowledge of where we're going versus where we've been in the industry. Do you still run up against typecasting, or do you run up against typecasting as they look at your age and say, you know, this 30-year-old, right? And, we want you to play this, or we want you to play, you know, an angry mom or an angry this, or, you know, and a job is a job and all that. But how do you deal with not being typecast?
Well, first of all, you are going to be typecast because a casting director is going to look at your picture and say, this is what I see this woman as. For example, in my age range now, I get, you know, judge, therapist.
Did you ever get Judge Judy?
No.
You'd be a great Judge Judy.
You know, serious, kind of severe. I mean, Cage No More, I played a madam. You know, I don't get the girl next door type of thing. But so one thing as a woman that really changes is that you get to a point, I'll never forget when my agent told me, I'm in my 60s now, my late 60s. I'll say it. I have no problem saying it. But as a dancer, I always had a young feel and, you know, in good shape. So I never think of myself as 60. You know, I don't have any children, so I'm not a mom. So it's like, who am I? And and what happens is you get older, but they see you how they want to see you. But their idea in Hollywood of a grandmother is somebody, sweet little grandmother, 55 to 60.
Right.
So I look at this casting and I say to my agent, but I'm not a little old grandmother. They want the woman with the little gray hair.
The gray hair, I was going to say.
Where's the beef lady? You know, that type of thing. And it's really disconcerting because it's shocking for me to be able to let go of, you're not going to get cast in the blonde, you know, I'm not going to get cast in this look. I get cast best off my really ugly picture, which is no makeup, looking like trailer trash, alcoholic. Those are the roles.
Yeah.
And my coach says, just laugh all the way to the bank with that.
That's you know, true.
You
that's another
a woman has
cashing.
To let go of the feeling of, I still want to look pretty on, you know.
Well, men go through that too. Men are
but they look better as they age in Hollywood, so
well,
to speak.
Well, the standard that a man can get older and he's distinguished, but
right, with, you know, the gray hair.
Right? Yeah, right. Yeah, that adds character, that gray.
Right.
But you do that
with women, it's very different.
It's very different, and it shouldn't be. And I think do you, or tell me if I'm wrong, but I think we're moving in the right direction. Would you say?
Yes.
That, you know, that we're realizing the power of actors that have been around, that know what they're doing, that know their craft like the back of their hand, and aren't pigeonholed to certain stereotypes.
Well, it's funny because I got an audition a little while ago to play a woman who's like 90 years old, and I called my agent. I said, I want to play 90, and she goes, but they can make you up. They can make you up to look older. Film is different because you really, theater, you can you can be old and play young because it's up on a stage.
Right.
But when you're on film, they can tell how old you are.
In the days of high definition 4K.
Right? But no, you have to be able to let go of your ego. The ego's got to go away of, this is what I want to play. And it's got to really be what they want you to play. And your job as an actor is to make that role come alive, no matter if it's an ugly person or a bad person, an evil person. You don't have a choice as an actor too much to pick your roles, like a Meryl Streep would be able to pick her roles.
Right. Have you starred in, and you don't have to name the production or whatever, or have you been in a role and going in you thought it was one thing, and then when you actually were doing the role, performing the role, you found different aspects of the character or different way to play the character than maybe was considered? I mean, have you ever had a situation
yes,
like
that? Yes, actually, Cage No More,
okay.
One of my biggest roles, which mm-hmm. I love, the one I got to speak Greek and use my fluency in Greek in. It was a
awesome.
Wonderful movie about human trafficking, and it had a great message. And
yeah.
When I went in to do that audition, my agent called me and said, they're looking for a Greek madam, a wasted old whore woman. And I said, you know, when you think of a Greek person, you think dark hair, swarthy complexion. You mm-hmm. don't think of me because I usually don't look Greek to people.
Right.
Although a lot of northern Greeks have aquiline features. But anyway, I said to my agent, I said, why am I going? I'm driving down to L.A. into this audition. I'm not going to get this part. I could read the description. It was totally anti-me. But she said, you speak Greek. So this is why you have to take the little thing that might mm-hmm. connect, and you have to go in there and show them. And a lot of times you can change their minds as to what they think they wanted. So I drove down to L.A. I was living up in the Bay Area at the time, and I drove 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in, and I did the role. You know, I didn't wear any makeup. I tried to make myself look kind of swarthy or whatever. And the woman said to me, are you Greek? And I said, yes, I'm Greek. She said, you don't look Greek. Well, I pulled off the role and I did a great job. And she said, great, you know, and called me back for a callback 3 days later with the director. And I walked in and the director said the same thing. Are you Greek? And I said, yes. And, you know, I had my hair up and, you know, I just didn't look like what the description was.
Of what they thought.
Of what they asked for. Swarthy Greek, wasted old hooker turned head madam of a trafficked organization. You know, like it
wow.
was a like someone like really tough like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I went in and I played her more along the lines as I was telling you that I usually get cast as a judge or someone like a businesswoman type of thing. And I played her with a Greek accent, very severe, but very intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the role. I got the role. They flew me from California to Baton Rouge, all expenses paid, a week-long SAG contract. It was a wonderful role. And I said later, I got very friendly with the director. She does a lot of faith-based films all around
okay.
the South. She's wonderful. And she said, I said, why did you hire me? She says, I saw every Russian, Greek, Polish, swarthy woman in Hollywood. She says, you came in, you didn't look like any of them. You spoke the Greek right, and
right.
You acted very well. But she said, I said, wow. She goes, you lent the role to be a businesswoman. Now, somebody who's running all these men in about auctioning off trafficked girls,
mm-hmm.
you need a strong woman. You don't need some
right.
washed up hooker, right?
Right.
She said, you played her intelligent. You played her tough. You were going to take any baloney from the men. And you were, and
right.
you changed my mind about that role, even though you were light-haired and this and that. And so
the power in that you must have felt in that moment.
But I made a choice on the role, and that's what an actor has to do. You have to read the script and say, this is how I'm going to play this, and not try to second guess and say, what do they want? What do they want? What do they want? No, if you're a good actor, you find the life in that role how you want it. You bring out yourself in it.
It's amazing. That's a very good story. And it just goes to show that, you know, we can't judge an actor, or we shouldn't judge anybody by the looks, because, you know, there's definitely the method, the actors that can get in the role and they can lose 100 pounds here. There's the Robert De Niro's, there's the, you know, people like that. And but getting in there and finding the essence of that character and that's a great story of changing and finding that that's something, and in making sell, you basically sold that role
because there's something
yeah.
in every script that you read, there's something that is in you that you can bring out in there.
Right.
That's why as an actor, it's so important to like people and to watch people all the time, and to, you know, you have to be able to understand people.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see like strange people, or I watch them in restaurants, and or my own sisters-in-laws or brothers-in-law, and, you know, you just look at them and you pick up habits and you say, okay, that would be great for this kind of character. And you just register it all, and that's your technique.
that is kind of like a sponge in a way. Like you're soaking up different elements and then kind of making it your own, putting your own spin on it. That's,
you know, if I'm going to ever play a DJ, I would like model it on you.
Oh gosh. Well, I don't know what to say. thank you. But theater, you mentioned that. Obviously, you don't get a second chance on stage. You know, film, there's always 90 takes if you need it. Have you ever, maybe early in your career, have you ever had a situation that didn't go the way you thought it would go, or you like delivered a line and you're like, okay, that wasn't the response I was expecting?
Not so much that, but that you completely blank out and such. The beauty of theater versus film, see, to me, film is like the editor's medium. You're just a puppet. You do the thing. They're going to cut you. They're going to make you look the way they want. Right. Sometimes you have to do the end of the movie before you do the beginning of the movie. So it's really an editor's and director's medium. Whereas theater, once you get on stage, nobody's telling you anything. It's you from beginning to end. So you have much more control. And it's really a communal effort with the other people on stage, because if you don't give them the right cues, then they're not going to be able to do their parts properly. So it's every performance is different. You know, I've done long runs of some musicals, and, you know, maybe you have an off night, but you still got to pull it off somehow. Maybe you hurt your foot in the middle of the dance number. You've got to keep going. You know, there's all kinds of things that you have to immediately address. I remember going out, I was doing Grease, the musical Grease.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was playing Sandy.
Sandy.
And I was out in the middle.
Did you do a Greek accent? No.
No. I did. You know, summer loving had me. I remember one show I was doing for like 4 weeks in a summer stock production, and I just blanked out. I blanked out totally on the words, and all I saw was like blackout in the audience, and it was this strange, like sort of surreal feeling. And I just started singing. I mean, it's just, or dancing. You just ad lib. You start dancing until you get back on. And it's
They don't know the routine. This is the first time.
Right. Well, that's exactly what I tell my dancers, you know, my younger kids that I teach. I say, they don't know what it is. You know what it is. You can't show it on your face. You can't go, you can't be deer in the headlights.
Yeah, you've got to have that kind of poker face when you're in that role. And that's very, very good, because stage fright can be paralyzing to actors. And
it comes on every once in a while. I don't usually get stage fright because I'm pretty well prepared, but it's good. I mean, when you go on to do a monologue or anything on an audition for theater, you know, your blood pressure goes up. It's just natural adrenaline, and you have to make that work for you.
But that is exactly what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you turn that fear into fuel.
Right, exactly.
And then you'll probably get a better performance than you may have even going in.
Right,
you know?
And you don't know that that's going to be a great performance at night, and sometimes it's not a great performance, and you think it's going to be a great performance. So.
Well, talk about great performances. We've got a lot to talk about here with our guest today, Madeline Curtis, and star of film, television, theater, dance, choreography, with her four degrees that you hold, four masters, no.
Three masters and an associate's in veterinary technology, because I love animals.
Awesome. this is my segue to taking a break. So we just got a few things here, and remember, on Facebook, we're on Facebook Live, Savannah on Film. If you want to jump on there and you've got any questions for us or any comments for Madeline, we certainly will address your questions and comments. But we're going to hit you up with a few announcements here, and we'll be back with Madeline Curtis on Savannah on Film.
In addition to the museum and gardens, the Ships of the Sea Museum has celebrations and concerts. On Friday, November 15th, it celebrates the 200th anniversary of the Scarborough House with their Museum in the Moonlight concert, featuring music by Nickelbag of Funk from 7 to 9 p.m. More information can be found at shipsofthesea.org.
Thank you to everyone who made a financial contribution during this year's on-air membership campaign for WRUU. Because of your generosity, we're able to continue bringing you the music and talk programs you've come to expect. We're now delivering your thank you gifts. Expect them soon. And we're back on the air with our regular programming, The Best in Savannah. That's what we're all about. If you somehow missed the campaign, you can donate anytime at WRUU.org. Donations keep us going. All of us here at the station greatly appreciate what you, the community, does to make Community Radio 107.5 possible. Here's to another great year of radio.
WRUU 107.5 FM is a new and different listener-supported and all-volunteer community radio station for Savannah. Our diverse broadcast and web programming is supported by generous listeners who value our passion and spunk. We are independent of other media and receive no government or large corporate support. People like you are the largest and most important source of our funding. Go to WRUU.org to find out how you can make a one-time or monthly contribution. Thank you.
And we're back here with super multi-talented Madeline Curtis. And in case you want to know the spelling on that, that is M-A-D-E-L-O-N Curtis. So if people want to reach you, they want to get in contact with you, where are you at on social media? Where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter at Madeline Curtis. I'm on email. I mean, you can reach me through my website. My email address is madeline@madelinecurtis.com. I'm on Facebook. You can like my page at Madeline Curtis.
Okay. So before the break, we were talking about theater. And I mean, you've been in some wonderful plays, and this is one of my favorite films that was, I think, originally a play, or maybe it was a film, then it was a play, on Golden Pond. You played Chelsea in that. Mm-hmm. And what a brilliant movie that was. And that's just like one example. I mean, South Pacific, Oklahoma, Camelot. A funny thing happened on the way to the forum. A Chorus Line.
Yeah, I choreographed a lot of them too.
What was that experience?
Sometimes I choreographed them and was in them because they didn't have a choreographer. I loved dancing, and when mm-hmm. I first got into it, I did a lot of the chorus work. I loved the Bob Fosse musicals. Things like Pippin and Sweet Charity. So I did chorus work in them, and then, mm-hmm. I moved into leads. So I did lead in Chorus Line. I did Cassie. I did Cassie in a couple of different productions of Chorus Line. I did Charity and Sweet Charity. A lot of those clips are on my website. I just loved it. Now that my dancing days are sort of over, I moved into competitive ballroom dancing for a while mm-hmm. because I still wanted to perform. But then those high heels got too much for me. So I'm also a Pilates instructor, so I tend to be able to work correctly. So I didn't, knock on wood, have any major injuries or major problems, except a few sore feet and a few arthritis toes.
and that touches on a good topic. Doing the Pilates is part of being an actor and having longevity in the business is being healthy.
Absolutely.
You know, and not just actors, but especially actors, especially dancers.
Right.
I would argue that a dancer works as hard as a football player on their fitness, you know. And that may sometimes be a not so important thing to some actors. Maybe they say, You know, I'll go out, I'll party, I'll have that party lifestyle, that, you know, right. Hollywood lifestyle, and then I'll show up set and do my thing, and then it's party, party, party on to the next party. But, you know, that catches up with a person over time. And health and fitness, I mean, if you don't have your health, you don't have anything else.
Dancers are star athletes. People don't realize it. I've taught actually some dance to football players. And they're not anywhere near as flexible.
Especially
as
ballet. I know that like a lot of football players.
Some of them take ballet, you know.
Because it helps them be flexible and to see some of the acrobatic, like, you know, catches that they, you know, make.
Oh, I know. And the men are strong. They're lifting the girls up all the time. I mean, it mm-hmm. is really deceivingly the graceful ease of it is totally deceiving. Just like good acting is seamless, mm-hmm. that's how good dancing is. When it looks easy, that's why I tell my students, they're struggling along, and I said, if you could do this well, and they're all frustrated, I said, if you could do this well, you'd all be professional ballet dancers. It takes 20 years to get good at this.
Right.
Same thing with acting. It doesn't happen overnight. And sometimes some new actors and young actors think, well, I'm just going to make it. I'm going to make it big. And yeah, once in a while that happens. But if you may have, you know, a one-hit wonder, and if you don't have your skills up,
that's true, yeah.
It's not going to happen a second or third time.
And being an actor, you have to work on, like you said earlier in the program, you have to work on your acting chops. You have to exercise. That's like a muscle you have to exercise, too, because, you know, you may find have you found maybe a better technique as you approach roles over time?
Yes, I have a very strong technique how I approach them. I found a wonderful acting coach, actually, in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I've taken, you know, every commercial acting course, all this, that, the other thing, all through my life. I've always enrolled in something. But this man, Richard Seid, he has a technique that I found. I've done Meisner, I've done all kinds of techniques, and it all comes together. But he has some very specific things about being in the moment, and he's got a great website too. And that's what got me to do that role in Caged. I walked in with total confidence. I can do cold reads. I can analyze. A character immediately in an audition if they ask me to change how to do it. I mean, this just comes with practice, just like anything right. else. And you can't, a person who just thinks you're going in to read the things on the paper.
Yeah.
They
might as well just turn around and leave.
That's what I thought it was, too, 30 years ago. But
yeah.
The more you know you don't know. That's the problem.
Right. There's a famous line by Don Henley says, the more I know, the less I understand.
That's right.
I feel like that a lot. You know, I try to approach life, if I'm not learning something new every day or at least in every experience that I'm in, then I kind of feel like I'm treading water. You know, I think
true.
You never stop learning. You should never limit yourself, and you should feed that creative muse in yourself, and whether that manifests itself in acting, or, you know, I work in sound and other things. I'm a writer also. You know, there's different ways. What would you do if you weren't an actress?
I would work with animals.
You'd work with animals.
I do. I'd work with animals because I like animals a lot better than I like most people.
So what would you?
Oh.
People will say that.
And I'll be honest. I'm a very honest person. I love animals. I love mm-hmm. the honesty and the truthfulness of animals. I've always been interested in health. And, you know, I entered college wanting to be pre-med and defaulted to French because I didn't want to take chemistry anymore. But, No, that's why I kept going to school so much, because I love learning new things. And whenever I kind of got a little stagnant, I'd say, oh, time to go back to school for something new.
Right.
And in fact, some people would look at my resume and say, when are you going to figure out what you want to be when you grow up? And other people will look at it and say, wow, this is really interesting. So it depends who's
right.
looking at it.
And animals bring so much to a person's life. And what was your degree again with the animals?
Which one? Vet tech. Vet tech. I went back and I went to school back when I was in my 50s.
Oh, okay.
I went early 60s, actually. And I got a veterinary technology degree. I got to be a registered veterinary technician in California, which is right under a vet. Pretty much do everything a vet can do. And, you know, it was hard. I mean, I worked for a while in vets. And, having to see how owners, you know, it's not the animals that have a problem. It's the owners mostly.
It's the owners.
You got to train the owners.
You got to train the owners.
You know, we had to deal with the owners, and that became a problem because the animals, they know what they're doing.
I was trying to think what I was going to say next. My brain just emptied.
That's okay.
I hit stop on my brain there. So what have you learned from some of the pitfalls that you've had throughout your career? I mean, what can you think of, like, one specific thing that you've learned or you thought you knew, and then later on?
Well, like I said, for a woman, one of the big ones was transitioning from how I saw myself and how I wanted to present myself as an actress right. to what other people, they want you to get the role, but they need to fulfill what they see you as. And that's what's so hard because, for example, mm-hmm. if you're this look, you are going to become cast for those types of things. The way you get out of that is when you get famous enough or you have a more clout,
right.
then you can start saying, I want to try right. for this, and then change their minds. I happen to be able to change their minds on Cage No More because there weren't a lot of Greek-speaking actresses. So, but it's really hard. You know, you say, I want to play this type of thing. I want to play that. I want to play this. You get pigeonholed a lot, and you just have to say, you know what? That's the way I make my money. Robin Williams, for example, I look at him as an example. He was a comedian.
Right.
They always thought he was funny. He was a fabulous actor when he did Dead Poets Society.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
And those things, I mean.
He's one of the people that could do anything.
Right. But at first, he was just funny Robin Williams.
Right.
So you need to start as something just like the Beatles. They started as a crazy little rock group, but yeah. they were genius writers.
Exactly.
And you can't show them that other stuff until you actually get your foot in the door. So.
Yeah, you don't start with Sgt. Pepper's.
Right, exactly, you know? Right.
You got to start with something else. Television. You were on General Hospital. You've been on The Young and the Restless.
When I lived in L.A., I did some small stints on there.
Right. So what's the L.A. scene like?
The L.A. scene is crazy. Okay, so like I said, the New York scene to me was more about the theater. You know,
right.
that was my ballet years and all that. The L.A. scene is just, it's just a crazy place. Things are moving out of L.A. now. Things are moving out. Mm-hmm. Atlanta is giving L.A. a big run for its money.
And Savannah.
And Savannah.
And Savannah, yeah.
So when we decided to move here, I was so excited because I've actually had more auditions taping here since I moved here 5-6 months ago than I had in L.A. in the last 2 or 3 years.
Wow.
Because there's so many more productions going to Vancouver, Atlanta, Savannah. They're not going to... L.A. is just too expensive. It's too crowded. It's crazy. 20, 30 years ago, it was a different place. There's fewer agents because they can't keep up their agencies anymore. And there's more actors because of reality TV. And so more and more, everybody now with YouTube thinks, I can be a star. So there's a million people and not enough people to represent them. And so that's why a lot of people, you know, they go there. And in the old days, you could go, on the old days, I'm saying, the 90s.
Yeah.
The old days.
That's the old days to me.
The old days. You go, I'm going to go. If you drove to L.A., if you wanted to make it, you'd go to L.A. or New York.
Right.
You don't have to go to those places anymore to make it because everything's on tape now. You can tape something in the middle of Nebraska and be seen by a CD.
Yeah.
So it's very fluid. The internet has changed a lot of things. It's also made it less impersonal in a way, because when you have your headshot online in front of a casting director and there's, 10 by 10, so there's 100
right.
people thumbnailing, we'll look at her and we'll see her and her. In the old days.
That's fine.
Days, the messengers ran around with you had to have 500 black and white headshots and they'd give you your turnover, you'd look at the resume. None of that exists anymore. Bing, they're all paperless. And if you don't look good in that little 1-by-1-inch square, that's why it's important to get your headshot.
I mean, you can probably attest to this, being in the business as long as you have, that you don't get every role that comes up. You know, you could get 10, 20 passes on a role. And I mean, there's famous actors and actresses out there that have run into that, and actors, it's one of the things that amazes me is people that turn roles down and could have been this actor or this actress could have been in this big blockbuster, film or this, Academy Award winning performance, but they turned it down for whatever mm-hmm. reason. And have you ever turned something down and then said, oh, I wish I would have done that? Or
no, I've never turned anything down. I do turn down some things because some things aren't worth my while because it might be a SAG low budget, low modified, and they pay $125 a day and they want you to go to Timbuktu. And by the time you spend your money to do it,
right,
you're in the hole. So, you know, you have to take each project individually and say, and that's what's interesting here in Georgia for me, being a right-to-work state, that's all new to me. That, you know, we made a lot more money as extras, as SAG extras in the big places.
Right.
But here, you know, the non-union people and the union people make the same amount of money in extra work.
And it's a right-to-work state, so, you know, you could be gone. You know, you could walk up to you and say, we'll see you tomorrow.
Right.
We're recasting, you know.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, it's very different. And so I'm getting used to that. I don't quite understand it all, but I have a really good agent that I really like. And, you know, things are different. Things are a little different here. And more opportunities, I think. You know, the networks, it's so hard. The network televisions, it's so hard to get things with them. You have to get up so high by the time you get a network series. You know,
it goes through
so many channels.
I know that it's been talked about a lot in the trades and stuff about the rise of Netflix, the rise of Disney, and all these companies, Amazon Prime.
Amazon making their own
stuff. They're making their own films. And the wonderful Steven Spielberg, you know, he could never do anything the rest of his life, and he's still, you know, a magnificent genius. But, you know, he has said, you know, that he doesn't think some of these Netflix-based and whatever films or whatever should be, that weren't in theaters, that should be up for Academy Awards. But the whole industry is evolving and changing rapidly, and a lot of things are going to streaming, and streaming is the future.
And you know why? Because people watching their shows differently now. People watch on their phones. People are in transit. People want to sit down and watch. I want to watch all of House of Cards now.
Right. And, or like Game of Thrones, you know, which was on weekly. I mean, you're getting the production level on something like HBO or these other services, Amazon, and that. And you're getting these high budget. I know Disney is putting a lot into their streaming service, and it's been wildly successful. And they're putting in big bucks, and they have the big bucks to do it. But they're putting in big bucks to make really quality stuff. And you can probably attest to this. There was a time when then actors in film looked down on TV, people that were in TV. You know, those were separate worlds. You couldn't cross over. And if you somehow, you could cross over from TV to film, but if you did it the other way, it was like, oh, their career is on the downslide. It's not necessarily that way anymore, is it?
No, it isn't. You well, I mean, nobody really goes to the movies anymore. Not many people. Yeah. Because you get a big screen TV in your house, you sit home, why are you going to go sit... You're right. People only, there were movie stars, and then there were the TV stars when the small screen came.
And, you know, I will say, though, I'm a movie
buff. Do you still go to the movies?
I definitely go to the movies, and I would not replace it, especially for the big blockbuster films. You have
the big ones. Right.
You
want to see Jurassic Park or,
yeah,
the big
or Star Wars or something. I've got to see it on the big screen.
No, I agree with those. Right.
And, you know, there are films that are meant to be seen on the big screen, I think. And they don't have to be big special effects heavy things. But, you know, there are some films I want to see.
Like
Black Panther. Yeah, or many others. But, you know, my taste are I like a lot of things, not just like superhero films and stuff like that. I love action adventure. I'm a big Tom Cruise fan, mainly for one reason. I respect his business savvy and how he produces the stuff he does, how he does his own stunts amazes me. Mm-hmm. And he's just a high caliber actor. We had William Mark McCullough on here, who got to work with him on American Made. And he was just telling me how prepared he was. He knew his lines. He knew your lines. He knew the other person's lines. And that's so much of, like you were saying, knowing your craft. And for me, it's kind of like when we talk about film, and we talk about, I think of a person who really loves reading a book.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you can get it online. Sure, you can download it.
Right.
But there's nothing like having that book
tactile
in your hand.
Right, exactly.
The smell of the book. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, I don't eat popcorn unless I'm in a theater.
Right.
And then I think I have to eat 800 gallons of popcorn.
Or milk duds. Or
yeah, or something like that.
Right.
And there's
exactly.
something, there's that communal spirit that, especially when it's, you know, when you're there in the theater and the lights go down and the trailers come up or you're in a film, and no matter what kind of film it is, a mystery, suspense, you know, whatever it is, a horror film or whatever, and the whole crowd reacts the same, or, you know, there's something about that. And I don't think that's ever going to go away, no matter how much we stream.
Right.
At least for me, I'm going to be parked my butt in a theater anytime I can. And,
you know, in the old days, we used to, you know, when I was a child, I watched The Parent Trap with Haley Mills, mm-hmm. you know, 300 times. But, you know, you went to a little, they were old vaudeville, beautiful big theaters, right?
Right.
You know, and they put the screen down, and you'd have a little velvet seat you'd sit in. Now there's this big, you know, beautiful, comfy, reclining things. But you know what else I think has changed,
and
it makes people not want to go to the theater so much, even live theater, is that the manners of the audience is not the same
anymore. It's not what it
should
be.
People think that they're in their living room, they talk, they complain, they, you know, making noises, and especially in live
and, yes.
and theater, you know, and live theater too. You go to the ballet in New York City, and it's just not the elegant, quiet, respectful. There's something lost with that. And
right.
teaching classical ballet, I see it a lot in younger people today when I go in and teach, and they don't understand the protocol of being quiet. Of
yeah.
like, you know, you come in here, there's a respect for this. And it's just like, well, we talk, we do this, we do that.
No, you don't. And
it's hard. I don't know.
To me, it's almost a sacred place when you're in the theater. You know,
yeah.
I'm expecting you to have as good manners as I am,
right.
and that's not sounding uppity or anything. It's just respect.
It's a little different these
days. The place
days.
You
yeah,
are,
it
yeah.
is. And, but you're right. There is things that should be seen on the big screen, and
yeah.
then.
And just like things that you have to go see the play. You know, you have to see it in person.
Right.
And, well, this has been a fascinating conversation. We've got to wrap up. And I wish we had much more time. I'm going to ask you that question that I ask everybody. Where do you see your career in 5 years?
Where do I see my career? Very solidly here in Savannah and Atlanta in the Southeast.
So if you're looking for an actress that can play any type, you might want to consider.
I can put on wigs. I can take the makeup off. And yes, we have to be willing to do everything. And it's just like any job. Every job is important.
Right.
You know?
And with that, I want to thank you, Madeline Curtis,
for
being on the show this week on Savannah on Film. Hopefully you'll come
thank
back
you.
In the future and we can continue our conversation.
I really enjoyed
I want to thank
it.
Everybody
thank
who... watched us on Facebook Live, and those people, a lot of people will catch it on the replay there, Savannah on Film on Facebook. And as we roll out, I want to say thank you for listening to Savannah on Film, and we want to feature people at different levels. So if you're listening, you're in the industry, I'd love to talk to you too. Our email is savannahonfilm@gmail.com. We're always on Facebook Live, Savannah on Film. We're on Twitter and YouTube, and I think some of the shows are on Anchor now. Savannah on Film is a voice for the Savannah film industry. You've been listening to Savannah on Film with your host, myself, Ed Susevich, here on Savannah's number one radio station, voted by you, the listeners, WRUU 107.5 FM LP. We are Savannah Soundings Community Radio with Global Soul. I've been listening to another episode of Savannah on Film, where we give a voice to the Savannah film community. Please like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and follow us on Twitter. This program was originally broadcast on 107.5 FM in Savannah, Georgia, and worldwide on www.wruu.org. Join us next time for more intriguing insights into the vibrant Savannah film community here at Savannah on Film.